We'll send it down to the stadium for Jaguars today. Tony standing by. And, you know, Tony, I was thinking this. So many people in the organization and in the city have looked so forward to the construction project that is the amphitheater and the great, you know, events that have come and what it means for the game day atmosphere. And then I'm sure Doug Marrone is sitting in his office all these days waiting on a different construction project to be finished. And that will be the indoor practice facility, which would come in handy for days like today.
Yes, it would. There's no doubt about it. And they had to move a practice last week as well. Now, you know, if it's going to be really, really bad, they probably just do want to move it to a different part of the day. But on days like today, where it's not expected to be so stormy at 11 o'clock, you'd like to just be able to practice when you want to practice. But instead, obviously, they have to move it to this morning. They're doing the same thing tomorrow. They've already announced it. So, yeah, I'm sure Doug Marrone, outside of Shad Khan himself, those will probably be the two most excited men in Jacksonville when that project is done and they can just practice when they want to practice, what, regardless of what the weather's doing. And Doug Marrone's talked about the last couple weeks at OTAs. I think he's a little bit disappointed in the weather they've had to deal with throughout the OTAs, that they haven't been able to get these guys out really in much heat.
Yeah, he wasn't hotter.
Through the month they've been out, it's been raining every day.
Yeah, that you'd like to take advantage of that heat in the early season and, you know, when you don't have to train in it. Now, of course, there's also that part of exercise physiology that says that if you get out of your routine for as long as a month, which they will when the mini camp wraps up, that you're just going to have to reacclimate anyway. So I'll go with the players on just having some more comfortable conditions for these walkthroughs at this point. Brandon Albert has made it and is in town. Yeah. and on the roster. And, you know, we're not going to tell you that this is just unbelievably big news, but I think it does at least give us an inclination that he would like for his contract status to be different. But if you come for the OTA or for the mini camp, you would assume he'd be here for training camp and moving forward.
Yeah, you would. And look, I don't blame the guy for playing the hand that he had, right? I mean, he was a day basically away from becoming a free agent. He would have gotten some guaranteed money up front. How much? Who knows? I mean, I don't know that you know that he's going to get the same money that the other guys in free agency would have gotten, but he would have gotten something up front in free agency, which he's not able to do, obviously, with the way things worked out. So I don't blame him for playing his hand the way that he played it. I think after they drafted Cam Robinson, they said the things they said. They've continued to say it for the last 3 weeks, basically, that all the leverage that he may have had was gone. And look, if you want to get the $8.5 million, if you want to be the starting left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, the best way to do that is to show up when the mandatory part of it starts. So he's here today.
I'm not
all that surprised that he's here. And look, he's not going to walk away from $8 million. We knew that the whole time.
I wonder, can you incentivize this year's contract from a performance basis? And you know what? If you're a Pro Bowl tackle, next year's is guaranteed. Or some way to massage this 2 years left on his deal at about $9 million a pop. I don't really know if that's possible.
When the story broke, Jeff, honestly, I thought it would make sense, even from a team perspective, because he was just a day away from hitting free agency. If the team was planning on having him be the left tackle for at least a year, then guarantee the first year. Give him $5 million up front and say, look, here's $5 million. We'll pay you the other $3.5 million over the course of the season. And that may have been enough to get him to come in for the OTAs. I'm not sure that they were all that worried about it.
They
knew he'd be here when he needed to be.
Pigeonholed himself a little bit by, declaring that we're not going to do a new contract, but maybe you can get around that with some semantics and make part of that money guaranteed. I don't know. We'll see. Then as for the mini camp starting today versus OTAs, I think we're in the kind of the same boat. To be honest with you, from a mini camp, no news is good news, because the only news that can really come out is some fluke injury or no show. It's hard to draw too much quote unquote good news from these half speed, shorts and shirt workouts.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the big news is Brandon Albert's here. And that was going to be the big question going into it, and it's been answered. And now it's stay healthy, boys. That's basically the story that you want coming out of the next 3 days of practice. They're actually wrapping up Tuesdays here in about an hour or so. And, Jeff, we're going to have head coach Doug Marrone. He's going to join me on the program in the 11 o'clock hour, expecting him to be in here about 11:30 today to talk about what's going on.
All right, Guggen, so stand by for that. It's Tony Smith and Jaguars Today, and it starts right now. Have a great show.
All right, thank you very much. There's Jeff Prosser, Dan Hicken, and everyone else. Tyler Devitt, Beef, all part of the morning crew there. We call it The Drill, weekdays 6 to 10 a.m. right here on 1010 XL. I'm joined right now, and for the next few segments at least, by T-Wig.
Yes.
What's up, Wig?
It's hot out there.
It's hot.
I got out of my car.
Practice.
and I was singing Raspberry Beret saying overcast days never turned me on. But guess what? I wish we had one today because I got out there and I quickly smelled like sausage.
Man, it is
I'm telling you.
It may not be the hottest day, but it is muggy.
It's muggy.
We get rain for a week. It's pretty miserable when the sun comes back out for a few hours.
You know what kind of weather it is? Yeah, see, I'm not a sausage guy. You know what kind of weather it is? It's that weather when somebody says something to you that irritates you, even if it shouldn't. You go, what?
Yeah.
Like, no, move.
Yeah.
Get away. You're making it hot over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nasty, man.
Yeah, it's nasty, and it's the reason they moved it up today. I'm not sure with the way I was looking at the weather report if they really needed to now that we actually got to Tuesday, but they have. They're out there practicing right now. They'll be done in about an hour, which means here in about 45 minutes or so, we'll have an opportunity to speak with Brandon Albert. After practice, Doug Marrone is talking to the media after that, and after he gets done with his media availability following practice, he's expected to join me in studio here for the last segment.
Oh, I'd love to see that and be around here. Hopefully it'll happen before I have to hit the Hart Bridge. Doug is funny, man.
Yeah, Doug's a good dude.
I'd rather hang around for the stuff that didn't get on the microphone because usually it's going to be something that's going to have you something from Saturday Night Live, man. Doug, he had me in stitches at the J-Fund.
Doug's got a big personality. Looking forward to speaking with him a little bit later on in the show. T-Wig joining me for the next, probably for the first hour or so of the program today. I'm sure you want to get outside and hear what Brandon Albert has to say before you have to go get over to the station for midday chalk duties. But we get things started. We call it Jaguars today.
Given his roots in Jacksonville, combined with his experience and pedigree, there couldn't be possibly anyone better to accept the challenge. It's my honor to welcome home our new Executive Vice President of Football Operations and appropriately, once again, wearing the Jaguars logo, Mr. Tom Coughlin. I'm grateful to be back here in Jacksonville where the Tom Coughlin J Fund Foundation originated and to once again thank the wonderful people of Greater Jacksonville for their support. Judy's excited to be here. I'm excited to be here. And I look forward to working with each and every one of you for the betterment of our team. And it's time for us to get to work.
I can't answer that, but that's all that I'm... Go ahead.
Is that going to be the focus? What else is there? What the hell would you be doing this for if it wasn't a win?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to win today. Who's going to get the better lunch? I mean, let's not make any misunderstandings about why we're here. Yeah. This is all nice and dandy, but winning is what this thing is all about.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and T-Wig.
All right, getting things rolling here on Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. T-Wig alongside as Mike Dempsey continues his vacation. Actually heard from Mike yesterday.
He's on a water raft.
I'm not sure. I think he may be doing that today. Mm-hmm. They were at Dollywood yesterday. I know the Dempsey clan was at Dollywood yesterday, and they may be out on the river today.
He was doing a little radio this morning, not with us here in Jacksonville. He's doing some national radio with Mike Florio on Pro Football Talk.
Oh, they want to talk Brandon Albert, I'm sure, over there.
Mm-hmm. Is that a big storyline nationally? I don't think it is besides here, right? I would assume.
Probably not that big, but look, anytime, it's a starting left tackle in the league that's holding out until the beginning of veteran minicamp, so it's not like there's a bunch of big stories going on around the league right now. I mean, it's not as big as Odell Beckham not showing up for mandatory minicamp, but it's still a big story from an NFL perspective.
And he's a big enough name that him combined with the fact that Coughlin is here and everyone knows how Coughlin is and people want to see exactly how that's going to play, because nationally, even locally, but particularly nationally, this is the quote-unquote righting of the ship, This is Captain Ahab, or this is the guy that came back to straighten everything out. And when you have that situation with a guy that's holding out early, it becomes a national story.
Yeah, and look, I didn't watch NFL Live yesterday. I usually do on ESPN, but I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Albert reporting made the show. And if it didn't make it yesterday, I wouldn't be surprised if it made it today. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big enough story that they're going to talk about it. I mean, Telvin Smith's comments were featured on NFL Live.
Right.
And they were talking about, when Telvin was basically calling out his guys a little bit there. It's not like he was mentioning anybody by name, but they were talking about players in the AFC with the most pressure on them this year. And they listed Telvin – on that list. I don't exactly get that one, but I think that was just a way to talk about what Telvin had to say. But look, there are certainly some Jaguar storylines that are big enough that even the national guys can't ignore it. And Brandon Albert is a guy that's been a good enough player in this league for a long enough time that him holding out and trying to get a new contract and not being able to get it done is going to be a story across the country.
I agree with what you said, though. I think if you really wanted him here, just drop him a little nugget.
You could have.
Do something. Everyone who says they know football claims that there's no way he's not going to be starting, you know, when they, unless he's hurt. There's no way if they put their best five out there, he won't be one of them. If people really, really believe that, then, you know, at some point you have to understand that it behooves you to get him in, even if it means just giving him a little something. And we can talk about leverage and who doesn't have leverage all day, but if you want to win and you think he can help you win, at some point it doesn't come down to, well, who can get over on who. It comes down to what's best. And I always thought that, you know, his situation, because he was within hours of becoming a free agent, he was going to get some guaranteed money. Throw him a bone. Throw him a little bone if you think he's that valuable.
Well, I totally understood where Albert was coming from, right? And when like I said, when the story broke, I thought that's how it was going to work. Honestly, my reaction was, all right, the Jags will give him up front.
They'll just tell him, okay, you're guaranteed for the year.
Yeah, I mean, and that would probably be enough to satisfy Albert. Now, it may not have been, but I don't know. I think everyone was caught so off guard by Albert asking for it that I don't know if they wanted to give in to anything. Because it did feel, it genuinely felt like, and we'll hear from Albert this afternoon, and we'll see if he, you know, he's going to be asked about it. We'll see if he gives you any kind of insight into what was going on. But it certainly felt like talking to and listening to Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin and Dave Caldwell react to the story, it felt like it blindsided them when Brandon Albert was saying, look, I want to renegotiate my deal. It was like that idea hadn't entered anyone's head in the organization. We traded for him. He's been here already. He met with us before we made the trade. We made the trade, and then he came to Jacksonville and had a press conference basically with us introducing him. And now we're hearing about this. I think it caught everyone so off guard that they decided they weren't going to budge on it, and that's they drafted Cam Robinson to put a little pressure on the situation, and because they thought they were getting a good player that who could be the future left tackle for the franchise in Cam Robinson. But I'm not surprised that it's played out the way it has once we got through that first couple days where it felt like nobody on the Jaguars' end was going to be willing to budge.
Yeah, and the signing of or the trading for Brandon Albert and the subsequent drafting of Cam Robinson, I feel good about that because, you know, it's always seemed so mutually exclusive with bad teams where you can build for the future and team build and or still try to win right now. This is the way you do it. Brandon Albert helps you win right now. Cam Robinson could possibly help you win right now. But at the very least, if you don't win right now, you're building your team for the future. In the past, it's been too much of an approach on, well, let's just build for the future and sacrifice right now. I don't like that approach because you're putting all your eggs in one basket and really you're gambling. That's what you're doing. For instance, you can't tell me that the whole Gus Bradley, Dave Caldwell scenario where they were together, where everything was built to come into fruition or manifest itself at some point at the end of the third or the beginning of the fourth year. It felt like everything was bottlenecked to that. Okay, so what if you get there and you're still just as bad as you were when you started?
Right.
It's what happened.
Yeah.
And it's no good.
No.
And it takes the fans on a ride that you believe this singular approach way of doing things, and it just doesn't work. It's okay to be in a position where you have an idea, you have a blueprint, you have a trestle board, and that's what you want to do, and that's the direction that you want to go. But it has to have some bend in there. It has to have some contingency actions. It has to have, okay, look, if this doesn't happen, this is the way we can go with this. It can't be this we're either going to get rich or die trying approach to it. And that's what it was in the past. And I think that's what drained the fan base a lot.
Yeah, I think it did too. And look, you know, we interact with them every day. We hear the complaints. Some of them are reasonable. Some of them not so much. But you don't have to be rational to be a fan. You just have to be a fan The good news is you don't have to worry about it with Brandon Albert anymore. He's here. If he's going to be here for the mandatory portion of this offseason, then he's certainly going to show up for training camp, you would think. So the guy that you traded for to be the left tackle, at least for the short term, is going to be in a Jaguars uniform, right, is the way that everything worked out. The question then becomes the domino effect on the rest of what's going on with this offensive line. We can get into that today. The fan feedback question of the day today asking you, it's Luke Bowenko's birthday. And if you don't follow Luke Bowenko, Elbow70, on Twitter, do yourself a favor. You should be following Luke Bowenko on Twitter. He's one of the funnier guys on the team, always entertaining with what he's doing there on social media. So the question today is simply asking, who's your favorite Jaguars-related social media follow? Whether it be Facebook, Twitter, whatever, Snapchat. Your favorite guy to follow, it can be a player, it can be a former player, it can be a broadcaster, it can be, you know, if it's one of us on the radio, I feel bad for you that you don't have somebody more entertaining in your life from a Jaguars perspective, but it could certainly be one of us as well. T-Wig with me for at least the next couple segments as we get things rolling here on a Tuesday. Doug Marrone, again, joining me at around 11:30 this morning to talk a little bit about what's going on here with the Jacksonville Jaguars as we get things rolling on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today right here on 1010 XL.
Jaguars Today Tuesday is brought to you by 904 Thin, where they guarantee you'll lose at least 20 pounds.
This is Alan Hearns, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010 XL.
Agent 88. He's one of those guys that's thrilled to be out there playing football again. I tell you, they got a lot of guys on this team that, you know, you can tell they love the game. They love playing. And I think if you were to make a list of those guys on this roster, that Hearnsy would be towards the top of that list. Mm-hmm. Just loves playing the game of football. T-Wig, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. And we'll see how the whole wide receiver position shakes out over the course of the next several months. Of course, not a whole lot you can tell in minicamp over the next 2 days as they're going to wrap up practice here in the next half hour or so out there. But especially with D.D. Westbrook not even available. So we'll see what the competition looks like for that fifth and sixth wide receiver spot. The first four positions on that depth chart look like they're pretty set with Hearns and A-Rob and Lee and D.D. Westbrook. You would think those would be your top four. From there, the debate begins. Aurelius Ben's been a good enough special teams player that you would think he probably has a roster spot on this team. Mm-hmm. And then there's that, do they keep six wide receivers? If they do, who's that going to be? Is Rashad Green going to be the punt returner for this team or not? Which kind of feels to me like the way that he gets on this roster. If D.D. Westbrook wins the punt return job, I wouldn't be surprised if, one, they just keep five wide receivers, or if they keep another wide receiver, if it isn't, you know, one of those guys like an Amba Edetawo or something like that to give him a shot on the roster.
I think it's one of the reasons you have to consider that they may keep six this year. It has nothing to do with this season. It may have something to do with next season, because if they let somebody go that they consider, you know, a pretty good football player or a guy who could be their fourth or fifth receiver in any normal circumstance, and then come next offseason, by them already having Hearns under contract, you wonder if they're going to pick both Robinson and Lee. Who pays their top three guys when you have D.D. Westbrook as your number four?
Right.
So they may keep an extra guy this year just for the sake of understanding that, you know what, somebody ain't going to be here next year and we'll at least still have our five people in place. Because it's hard for me to imagine that they're going to sign Robinson and Lee, considering they already have Hearns on the contract.
It would be hard to imagine that they keep all three of them. I think the Westbrook deal to me is interesting, and it's not something that we've talked long about, because, look, we haven't even seen Westbrook do anything. Mm-hmm. He's hardly been able to participate in the OTAs to this point. Hopefully he'll be healthy for training camp by the time we get around to that, and you start getting a real look at what he's going to be. But missing this kind of time, I think, for a rookie is different than, say, Tashaun Gibson missing it. Right, this is valuable time for a young guy to learn the offense. If they wanted to play him something besides the outside, which is all he did at Oklahoma, he played outside on one side. That's all he did at Oklahoma. And to come into the league where, you know, they'd like to be able to move him around a little bit, but if he's not available right now, how much of that do you have time to do once you get into training?
You're right. Now, yesterday at the end of our show, we talked to Lincoln Riley, and I had always heard that all Westbrook did, in fact, I think I heard it from the brass here, that all he ever did was play outside. Lincoln Riley spoke highly of his IQ, not only about his explosive physical ability, But Lincoln Riley kind of mentioned that he did move around a little bit. So, you know, maybe they were going on film, and when they say all he did was they really meant mostly what they did or most of their evaluation. But according to Lincoln Riley, he's a smart football player who actually did move around a little bit when we asked him yesterday about D.D. Westbrook.
Yeah, and I think D.D., I'm curious to see. Look, obviously he has to keep his nose clean, which hasn't been an issue since he's been here. So until it is an issue, I guess I can stop bringing it up because we all know that's part of the deal with D.D. Westbrook. But D.D. is a guy that it feels like he's going to push one of those three guys off the roster. That's what's going to happen because you're not going to pay three of them. Now, which of those guys it is, I think, is up for debate, and you can make an argument about any of them. I would say the hardest argument to make is it being A-Rob that he's pushing off the roster because it certainly feels like they're on the verge of being willing to pay A-Rob, and we'll see again when Allen Robinson talks this week just how he feels about where those contract negotiations are right now, because no one's saying much about it, at least at this point, with him or Linder or Telvin Smith. But A-Rob feels like he's on this team for the next several years. Beyond that, I think the discussion gets interesting.
It does.
Where, you know, Hearns has been kind of a – he's more of a possession guy. Does D.D. give you the same thing that Marquise does? You know, where it's this explosive type of athlete, and are you better having two of those, or are you better having a guy like Marquise or D.D. Westbrook and Allen Hearns?
I think he's actually probably more explosive than Marquise Lee in terms of just straight line speed. Not as big, obviously, and I don't know if he's as acrobatic in terms of going up and fighting for the football, but D.D. is a guy to me that, you know, I've often said that teams that have a guy who sort of resembles DeSean Jackson and can resemble and do some of the things that Tyreek Hill can do in Kansas City, you know, it really, Brandon Cooks is that same dude, you know, just a very sudden football player. The Gabriel kid in Atlanta, he changed their offense a little bit with some plays that he made. While they're never going to be your focal point, it's still going into games where defensive coordinators can't game plan and say, you know what, we don't have to worry about, we can play up a little bit because they don't have anybody that can get behind you. They're not going to beat you with one play. As awful as the dude was for a long time with Carolina, Ted Ginn, you had to always know where he was.
Absolutely.
You didn't know if he was going to catch the ball, but the bottom line is.
And you're going to need to know in New Orleans this year.
That's right. You need to know where a guy, Kenny Stills, you need to know where guys like that are. And when you don't have a dude like that, it really makes your team, you lack a dimension. Tampa Bay last year, for instance, nobody worried about them getting deep. Nobody worried about Tampa Bay beating them for years. No one worried about San Diego until they went out and got Travis Benjamin. Mm-hmm. But once you get that element on your team where people really have to watch out for it, it changes the way you game plan. It changes the way the safeties play, you know, and it gives just the defense coordinator something else that he has to deal with.
Yeah, and it's been disappointing from a Jaguars perspective that, you know, it's been a long time now where, you know, the speed on this team, it felt like it was the fourth running back. You know, it was Corey Grant, and that can't.
That's all we talked about.
Yeah, that can't be it. Right, it's like Marquise Lee has it, but up until last year, the Marquise Lee story was, well, can he stay healthy? If he can stay healthy, maybe he adds some of that. But he finally stayed healthy last year, and he added some of it. I'm not sure that they used him enough in that kind of role where they just let him kind of run downfield and stretch it out a little bit. Maybe we'll see more of that this season. But it's not a team that's had a whole lot of speed. And I can remember having the conversation last year in training camp of, you know, whether Corey Grant was going to be on this roster. And I just kept saying, where else do they have anybody that can run like that? Like, I get it. He doesn't make anybody miss. That's not his game. It's not like he's an elusive runner, but they don't have anybody else that can straight line do what Corey Grant can do. And now it feels like they have a couple of those guys. With a healthy Marquise Lee and a healthy D.D. Westbrook, they have a lot more speed. They've gotten faster on defense, obviously, with adding a guy like Miles Jack to the middle of that defense. That he is a ridiculous athlete. Whether or not he's going to transition to the middle linebacker immediately or not, we'll see. I have very little concern about Miles Jack playing middle linebacker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, but he's a ridiculous athlete. And if you look at where they are from that perspective compared to where they were even just 2 years ago, it's remarkable what they've added.
Well, it's remarkable what they've added because the thing is they've managed to get faster and get bigger. Generally, when you get faster, it's the other way around. You don't get bigger. You don't add Calais Campbell and Malik Jackson and get a couple of 295, 300-pound defensive linemen on your team and consider yourself faster and more athletic. But that's exactly what they are when you consider that they had Jared Odrick and they had Sendarek, you know, post knee injury. They've actually gotten a little bit more athletic while getting bigger. And normally that doesn't happen. You just get more physical when you get bigger. They've gotten bigger at running back and faster and
yes,
more athletic. And then by adding Westbrook and even Brandon Albert and Cam Robinson, the team managed to actually not just improve its toughness and improve its size and its physicality, but they also have gotten more talented. You know, Jalen Ramsey's a big corner. They've been able to add size along with athleticism. Now, where the team was built before, isn't it funny that a team that was predicated or supposed to be built on speed, this Seattle speed, they just weren't very fast?
No, they were slow.
And you wanted to be a running team on offense, and you wanted to be a fast team on defense, and you were a relatively slow team on defense and a passing team on offense.
Yeah.
It just never – and I know fans are sick of it, but it just – I beat it up for so long, Tony, that they were saying that they wanted to be one thing, and they continued to be something else.
And I think you felt that frustration. You know, it hit a boiling point last year during the season. That's why Greg Olsen lost the job in the middle of the season was, you know, I mean, we talked to Dave Caldwell in studio and, you know, asking him about that kind of thing. He's like, we were looking at the numbers and we're running the ball. How much? Like, I thought that was the plan, was mm-hmm. for us to run the ball and kind of mm-hmm. control how much we're exposing Blake a little bit. And we're looking at it, and we're throwing the ball more than anybody else in the league. And where did this come from? And this is in games where we're in them, right? It's not even like we're always behind 20 points. It's games where we're still in it, and we're still just throw. And it just didn't make any sense. And there was this disconnect, it felt like, between the conversation they were having about what they wanted to be and what they were actually doing. And it's almost like we've talked before about when you have a bunch of guys that are doing something for the first time, you don't know what it's going to look like when they're actually put in the heat of the moment. And I think when they put a bunch of guys in these positions for the first time in Jacksonville, what wound up happening was whatever the conversation was for the 2 months of the offseason leading up to it, they didn't do that. No. Whatever it was that they thought they were going to do, they didn't do it. And whether it's because it didn't work early, and they said, forget it. Let's just do whatever we think we need to do in this game. And it was wrong. Like, the decisions they were making just weren't working.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, comes down to efficiency. It comes down to approach. I tell folks all the time, the Dallas Cowboys with Troy Aikman were a running team, and everybody knows that. But they threw it in the first and second quarter more than they did in the third and the fourth. Because they set it up. Troy would come out throwing, slinging it. They'd get up 10-0, and guess what? Emmitt would get 15 of the next 18 touches.
No, I hear you, and I remember that. And I can remember looking at the stat last year for this Jaguars offense where outside of San Francisco, this was the fastest offense in the league as far as time between plays run. On offense, they went faster than anybody else in the league except San Francisco with Chip Kelly doing what he was
doing
out there. And what struck me even more about that was the Jaguars went faster with a lead than they did when they were behind.
That's poor game management.
Yeah, it was just, and it was stunning when I saw the stat. And I know they didn't have a lead a bunch last year, but it's really like they would get the lead and decide to hit the gas for a team that kept telling us that they want to be able to run the ball and manage the clock, and then they just didn't do it.
But that's finishing. That's understanding where you are, who you are, and how to win. Those are the little detailed things that Tom Coughlin probably is discussing or had discussed with Doug Marrone. This team never learned how to win. They never identified a way to be able to finish and close out games. And a lot of times we pointed the finger at players and attributed it to this mistake or that call. Approach is the most overlooked thing. That there are just teams that just know how to win.
Yeah.
They know how to manage. In boxing, they call it winning rounds. You know, you didn't do much, but you threw a couple of body shots. You moved around.
Scoring points.
You jabbed him and you kept him at bay. He didn't score. You didn't score very much, but you know what? You won those rounds. You put those rounds in the bag.
Mm-hmm.
The Jaguars just never used to know how to win games. It always seemed like it was just some amateur dude on – John Madden letting the computer pick the play for him. Oh, I'll try this. Oh, I'll try that. Let's try this instead of having a plan of how to win. Even Baltimore, when they came in here late last year, and the Jaguars kept getting turnovers, and they wouldn't convert.
My goodness,
Baltimore had a plan. Their plan was this: our kicker can kick it from Brunswick. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to throw the ball to number 89 on 3rd and 5, and we're going to get 6 yards. We're going to cross your 50, and we're going to get 7 or 8 more yards, and then we're going to let him kick it from Brunswick, and they're going to win.
Yeah.
And they did it.
They did it. Despite the fact that they were turning the ball over and over.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And we'll see if the Jags have a better plan this year. I think it should be more clear what the plan is this year, and certainly the offseason has indicated what they want to try to do. We'll see if they're successful with it, with Fournette coming in the backfield, as well as the changes on the offensive line. Let's talk a little bit about that offensive line, Wig, with Brandon Albert being here now, certainly the likely winner of that left tackle job. So what happens beyond that? The movement of Brandon Linder on the interior of that line, what does that mean for everybody else on the interior of this Jaguars offensive line? And where does second round pick Cam Robinson land when everything is said and done? T-Wig, Fat Tony here with you on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, one more segment here with T-Wig here on a Tuesday. Then he'll head out to hear what Brandon Albert has to say before he heads back over to join Joe C. for the Chalk this afternoon from noon to 3. We'll have Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, in the studio with us here in about an hour for the last segment of the show. He should be coming in after he gets done talking to the media after practice, so we'll get the latest from the head coach of the Jags. I don't think we've had him in since he was officially given the job. I don't think we've had him in studio, at least. I know he wasn't out at the Super Bowl with us, so I think it's the first time we've had a chance to sit down and talk to him, and that's part of the deal.
Oh, yeah.
Around here now. The access has been limited, but that's okay.
Well, that's good, though. I mean, at least you still get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Trust me, man. I'm not complaining.
Studio's nice, though.
Studio is wonderful. And as all the fans out there are saying, look, I'm not complaining about the level of access I have. If they win 10 games this year, I don't care if I never get to talk to a player. Honestly, like, I don't care. It affects my job so little how much I get to talk to the players. As far as, look, we're going to come on here, we're going to do a radio show about the Jaguars every day. Whether we get to have a player in studio or not, they're kind enough to occasionally let us do that. And
bro,
we love doing it.
If they win 10 games, trust me, all of us will be talking way more than we want to.
Oh, dude. I can remember, you know, I know there's a lot of, you know, new people to Jacksonville and maybe some new fans and all that. Look, if you don't remember this city, I mean, 2007 was the last time that it was happening. Mm-hmm. This place was on fire.
Yep.
When they went up and beat Pittsburgh, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like having the pro sports team in your town making a run in the late season, even to try to get into the playoffs. And then once they get in the playoffs, if they win a game, I mean, there's nothing like it. Obviously, you can go back to 96 and 99 here in Jacksonville. It's just unfortunate that we don't have more stories to tell. You know, we can rattle off the couple of years. It's like, well, we got 96 and we got 99, and 2007 was pretty awesome. It's like, I'd like to just say, you remember that stretch from 2001 to 2017, mm-hmm. like we're the Patriots?
And the national request would be through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, if they win, all of that stuff takes care of itself.
I mean, the Patriots have been winning like this for almost 20 years. And it's almost assumed. I mean, it's assumed they're going to win the East and are the likely favorite for the Super Bowl again in the AFC. I mean, wouldn't it be nice to have a 20-year run like that? Holy cow.
Yeah,
you just assume before the season even starts, oh, yeah, 12 wins.
I can't imagine anybody not picking the Patriots. I know some Dolphins fans believe that they're going to make a little run at them because they've improved.
I made that mistake 2 years ago.
But,
it's not happening.
I really, really believe that the Patriots actually have probably gotten better. I know the one element that they had, which was consistent speed at wide receiver and size at corner. When Julio's got, they fixed it.
They did. They got Gilmore and they added Brandon Cooks. So, yeah, they've mm-hmm. addressed the two things that they perceived as weaknesses. It's like Golden State going out and pursuing Kevin Durant and making it happen last offseason in some ways. It's not exactly the same because the NFL doesn't work the same way that the NBA does, obviously. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a little bit about the Jaguars' offensive line. Brandon Albert in, which means he's likely the starting left tackle, although there's no guarantees. There could still be a competition there between him and Cam Robinson. But if you assume Brandon Albert's going to be the starting day left tackle for the Jacksonville Jaguars, how do you think the rest of this offensive line shakes out, especially in light of the news that we've heard with them playing a little bit with where they're going to play Linder, potentially? Where does Cam Robinson land on this line?
You know, it's very hard for me to talk about it because, you know, I've heard guys that played in the league discuss it a lot. And particularly Tony Boselli says that you put him at left guard. You don't care that he's never played left guard. I just asked the dude, man. I was like, I asked Cam Robinson, you ever played left guard? He said no. He's never played anything. So I don't know. I have to sort of acquiesce to guys that played the game to determine how easy that is. I know a couple of my buddies that coach, they always tell me it's not as easy to move a guy from one position to the other. Folks think just because a corner's slow, he can play safety. That's not true. And or because the guy's athletic, who played wide receiver and he can't catch, he can just go play corner. That's not true. Or that because Tim Tebow's big and physical that he can play tight end or fullback. That's not true. And because there are other parts of the game that the little nuances of the game that you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm never one to quickly say that. I'm more – the type that would rather go with somebody who's done something, who's familiar with what they've done. The key for me to trying to figure out what's going to happen is, what are they going to do with Brandon Linder? I mean, is he really going to play guard? If he plays guard, then that throws any scenario that you have of him playing center out of the window. So what I did was I put Cam Robinson at left tackle in a little makeshift thing we did on air. I put Cam Robinson at left tackle. I put Brandon Albert at left guard. I put Linder at center. And then I put A.J. Cann at right guard, I believe, and Parnell at right tackle. And the reason I did that is because, okay, if Brandon Albert is the left tackle and Cam Robinson is not the left guard, then I at least get the other three right. Because if you start if you start messing it up to the point where you're mixing them and matching them and get them all over the place,
sure,
you might not get any of them right because you don't know what they're going to do.
No. No, and I'm curious to see what they want to do with Cam Robinson now with Albert being in here. I don't think – we had John Osher in a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about the positions. Like, our question of the day was something about what position do you feel like the Jaguars need the most depth still? Are you still the most concerned about the depth they have at that spot? And I was thinking about it, and I have big questions about the starting five on the Jaguars' offensive line, but I think they got plenty of linemen. You know, it's not like I have a lot of concern about how many guys they have to play the position. It's, do they have anybody that I feel really good about in the starting five, right? And trying to figure out what that's going to look like to me is really difficult because, look, if they're going to move Linder around, which to me, and again, I've said it since the story broke with Linder talking about it a little bit, him playing guard again, but I've been saying it since then that to me it feels like a message to A.J. Cann. Is what that feels like to me, where they're basically telling AJ, you have to play guard better than Shatley or Bowenko can play center, or we're going to let Brandon Linder take your job. Mm-hmm. That's essentially the message that it came across to me, at least. I don't know if that's what they're actually doing. No one has said that's what they're actually doing, but that's what it felt like to me, given how talented Brandon Linder is, and they're trying to figure out whether they have more at guard or center. Basically, on this roster, if they're going to move Brandon Linder around, now's the time of year to do it. When we get into training camp, put Linder where you want him to play and figure out the rest of it around him, right? Because Parnell's likely going to be the right tackle. If you have Linder in there at the center spot, then figure out the two guards and let the competition for left tackle come up. The question for them becomes, because Albert hadn't been here,
right,
when they've had this time to kind of play around with it, like they have with Linder, I don't know, but I assume that the majority of the reps that Cam Robinson has been getting in the OTAs has been a left tackle.
Exactly.
So what are they going to do when we get into training camp? The competition is fine. How much time do you need, and when can you find out where else you could play that guy on the line? Like, do you have time still in training camp to figure that kind of thing out with a guy like Cam Robinson if you let that competition you know, go 2 weeks into camp. Then now are you saying, all right, let's try him at guard? Is that really going to work? I do have questions about that.
I just think for me, it comes down to when the pads get on, who can move people? Who can sustain when you start working out against those other teams that you're going to be in training camp with? To me, that's going to be the key. The key is what it looks like when you get out there. The question is, too, when people say put your five best on the field, I could get confused about that sometimes, because what if your five best players aren't necessarily the five guys that make the best unit? You see my point?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I'm getting to. It's how much time do you need to figure that out?
And that's the part of this that I don't get when you say put your five best guys out there. But what if they don't make the best unit? Because what if having your five guys out there, you have a guy at a position where he's not as good as he was if he would be somewhere else. And then you would have to put a lesser guy on the field to go with him. So the key is, if you could have great play out of Brandon Leonard at center, and then you could have really, really good play out of Brandon Albert at left tackle and Cam Robinson at left guard, is that better than having good play out of Linder at right guard, good play out of those two at left guard and left tackle, but then struggle at center a little bit and sacrifice a little bit at center just in order to get better play on the other side? So that's when I'm going to ask them that one day. What's the difference between putting your five best guys out there and the five guys out there that actually make the best unit?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the math game they were playing with it. And, you know, when Doug Murrum was asked about what's going on with Linder, he said, well, you know, and he was going through all the numbers. He's like, you got an 85 and a 90. And, you know, he was going through that whole answer. And I think that's basically what they were trying to play with in their own head. And that's why, to me, it came across as this is a message to AJ. This idea of, look, we expected more out of you in 2016. And if we're going to get that same kind of player in 2017 that we got in 2016, we're going to find something better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's a fine message to send to AJ Cannon this time of year. And I'm curious to see what it's going to look like when we get into camp. And look, I don't know the answer. I'm not a football coach. You know, I've never been playing, obviously, football at this kind of level. I don't know how much time an offensive line needs to know its own identity, right? I don't know if you can just throw five guys together on the field and say, look, these are our five best players. Let's go. You know, and if you have 2 weeks of practice, if that's enough. I don't know the answer to that question. Doug Marone has a much better grasp of that than I do. And the way that he talked about it a few weeks ago, at least, was, look, are you really worried about continuity, or do you just want to get the five best guys out there? I mean, that's the way he said it. So they're trying to figure out who those five best guys are. It's impossible to figure out until you get one of your five best guys in, and that would be Brandon Albert. Because he's certainly going to be one of their five best offensive linemen. We'll see if he winds up being the starting left tackle or not, but you expect him to be one of the five most talented guys on that offensive line. They haven't had that piece to play with through this month of the offseason, so we'll see how that affects the process of figuring out the offensive line once we get into camp.
Yeah, it's going to be telling. And the other thing is, like I say, once you start practicing against your own guys in pads, and then from that point, when you do the joint practices, can you move people? Can you protect Blake? Can you create holes for Leonard Fournette to be able to break loose and the rest of the running backs? I just think we often talk about competition, Tony, and then we want to just pencil people in. Well, competition is watching it happen and letting the chips fall where they may.
No doubt about it. T-Wig, kind enough to join me here for the first hour, brother.
Yes, sir.
We'll hear you again this afternoon on Midday Chalk with Joe C., noon to 3.
Yeah, I'm going to go check out the rest of what's going on out there and then get across that heart bridge. Yeah,
absolutely, man. Go say what's up to Brandon Albert.
I will.
Because he'll be talking here in about 10 minutes once practice concludes out there. Again, Doug Marone, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, expected to join me today at around 11:40. We got this date in football history as well as the Honda Drive around the NFL coming up next as we continue along on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history. Yesterday was kind of a newsy day with the retirement of Steve Young and the unfortunate murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ronald Goldman. Today, not so much news, but a couple of birthdays of note, including, it's part of the theme to today's show, so happy 26th birthday to Jaguars center guard Luke Bowenko, drafted in the sixth round in 2014, started 14 out of 16 games his rookie year. He's been one of the more entertaining players on the team for the last 3 years. Again, our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you today, what Jaguars-related person, so it can be a player, it can be a former player, it can be a media member, who do you like the most to follow on social media? So whether it be Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever, who do you like to follow the most? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Tyler, as well as the Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars Today. We'll get to some of your answers probably here in about 20 minutes or so. Three-time Pro Bowl defensive tackle Sam Adams, 44 years old today. Adams was a member of that vaunted Ravens Super Bowl winning defense in 2000, a defense that included Chris McAllister, Dwayne Starks at corner, Rod Woodson at free safety. Yes, that was pre-Ed Reed in a Ravens uniform. Tony Siragusa, Rob Burnett, Michael McCrary playing with Adams on that defensive line. Jamie Sharper, Peter Bowler, and, oh yeah, a little guy named Ray Lewis at linebacker. That team won 11 straight to finish the season and win the Super Bowl, including four playoff games. Get this. In the four playoff games the Baltimore Ravens played that year, they made the playoffs as a wild card. I believe they won 12 games in the regular season, but made the playoffs as a wild card. They allowed a total of 23 points in four playoff games, including only seven in the Super Bowl against the New York Giants. Those 7 points coming on a kick return to start the second half, so the defense really didn't give up anything in that game against the Giants, in which they won the Super Bowl. And happy 34th birthday to Gerald Sensabaugh, the fifth-round pick of the Jags. Spent his first four seasons here in Jacksonville before signing with Dallas in free agency. Played another four seasons in the league before he stepped away. So happy 34th birthday to former Jaguars player Gerald Sensabaugh. Happy 26th birthday to current Jaguars player Luke Bowenko. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Well, guys, I know T-Wig's familiar with this guy. Super Bowl 22 MVP Doug Williams has been named the Redskins Senior Vice President of Player Personnel. Since retiring as a player, Doug Williams has been a college head coach, and he's been in Washington's front office since 2014. Washington still does not have a GM, as they fired Scott McLaughlin back in March after only 2 years on the job, and the franchise said they fired McLaughlin back in March due to his problems with alcohol. A shoulder injury could keep John Ross, the speedster, out of training camp, out of the start of training camp, that is, in Cincinnati. The Bengals rookie receiver broke the 40-yard dash record at the combine while dealing with that shoulder injury that required surgery after the combine, and that surgery may require Ross to miss the start of training camp. According to Bengals.com, Ross won't be on the field until early August or so. The Bengals' first training camp practice is July 29th. NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport reported that running back Le'Veon Bell was not spotted at the training camp on Tuesday, the mini camp on Tuesday, the first of the 3-day session, which is mandatory for all players under contract. Bell has not signed his franchise tender and is not currently under that contract, so he can't be fined for missing the mandatory mini camp. The Steelers and Le'Veon Bell have until July 15th to work out a new deal, or Bell will play this upcoming season on that $12 million franchise tender. One final story, guys. The numbers for Jeremy Maclin and his brand-new football team, the Baltimore Ravens, are out. Maclin signs a 2-year, $11 million deal, $6 million in year number one, with the Ravens choosing Baltimore over the Buffalo Bills.
All right. You know, it is interesting as T-Wig's taken off. He's out there to talk to Brandon Albert a little bit after practice, which should be starting here in the next couple of minutes. But it is interesting, the Doug Williams story in Washington. Washington was the last team in the NFL to really integrate. And Doug Williams has obviously been a prominent member of that organization, winning the Super Bowl as a quarterback. We read the story a couple weeks ago, didn't we, on the show, Tyler, where I had found the newspaper clipping when Jim Brown and the Cleveland Browns went to play Washington. And the pull quote from the article, for me at least, was it was something along the lines of Jim Brown integrated the Washington goal line three times during the course of the game, because the Washington Redskins at the time were the only NFL team that at that point had not integrated. They didn't have any black players on their football team, still hadn't had any black players on their football team. And, you know, it's for Washington to have Doug Williams in a prominent position like that, when you consider the history of that organization, it is kind of an interesting story for a team that has dealt with the history that they have, at least from that kind of perspective. I'm a little bit surprised. I'm sure Eagles fans are upset with Jeremy Maclin. If the choice really did come down to Baltimore or Philadelphia, that he chose to forgo going back home to Philadelphia to go to a different spot like that in Baltimore.
That's not a whole lot of money for him. I saw someone point out on Twitter that's Marcus Wheaton-type money. I mean, if you're paying that for Jeremy Maclin, you're kind of taking the low risk, and hopefully he can return to his 2015 form where he caught 80 balls for 100 yards, 8 touchdowns, and the numbers last year seemed to pretty much cut in half all across the board.
Yeah, it was the worst year of his career last year in Kansas City, and I know he was a little bit banged up, but I don't think that completely explained it. Kansas City was a team that, I think it was 3 years ago, they went through the entire season without throwing a touchdown to a wide receiver. I think that was 3 years ago. It may have been four. But Maclin caught 8, I want to say, 2 years ago for Kansas City. He caught 4 last season, I believe, for the Kansas City Chiefs. It may have been lower than that. I'm just kind of...
It was only 2 last season. He went from 8 to 2, yeah.
Yeah, 8 to 2. It was a really bad season for Jeremy Maclin. So we'll see if he bounces back now that he's going to be in a Ravens uniform. That Ravens team is weird just from an offensive perspective. Obviously, they have Flacco, but with Steve Smith retiring, they got Perriman, who they drafted in the first round a couple years ago, that's never been able to stay healthy. I'm just not sure what exactly to expect out of that Baltimore Ravens team offensively this season. And they had that weird start to the year last year, including the win over Jacksonville, where they started like 4 or 5-0, I want to say, last season, and it all felt like it was smoke and mirrors.
Right, they were pulling out like 1, 2, 3, 4-point victories against teams that weren't all that great. So, yeah, they had a 4-0 record coming into the game against the Jags, but they weren't beating good teams, and they weren't beating them very handily.
No, and this Eddie Lacy story making weight keeps popping up on my timeline. Whatever. Those stories, for whatever reason, like I said yesterday, they bother me. Paying guys to make weight just bothers me in this league. They get paid millions of dollars. You can be in shape. That's your job, is to be in the proper shape to go play football. Doug Marrone expected to join us here in about half an hour or so on the program. We're going to get into Ryan O'Halloran had the article this morning talking about the storylines to watch for Jaguars mini camp. So over the course of the next 2 days now, as Tuesday's practice is in the books, we'll let you in on whatever Brandon Albert has to say, as he should be talking to the media any moment now following practice, as he has reported for the mandatory portion of the offseason. Obviously wasn't here for the 3 weeks of OTAs, but has reported now for the mandatory portion of the offseason. So we'll let you know what Brandon Albert has to say if anything interesting happens with that. We'll get into some of the stories to watch over the course of the next couple days out there, as well as let you hear from Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley, who joined the boys on Midday Chalk yesterday to talk a little bit about what was going on with Dede Westbrook during his time there. He was the offensive coordinator for the Oklahoma Sooners before he got promoted to the head coaching job. So he did have some comments about the guy that he coached to the Biletnikoff Award in that offense. So we'll let you hear the comments of Lincoln Riley, as well as take a look at some of the big stories for the Jaguars as they go through minicamp over the course of the next couple of days. It is a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony. Mike Dempsey still on vacation. He was going to be back next Monday, but apparently SiriusXM wanted to know if he could go chill out in New York for a couple days at the end of his vacation. And Dempsey said, sure, why not? So Dempsey will officially return next Wednesday. We'll get him on the show early next week, though. So Monday, Tuesday, we expect to be able to get him on and talk to him a little bit about how the vacation's gone, as well as the latest with whatever's going on with the Jags at that point in time. But he'll be back with us next week. I'll be joined by Doug Marrone here in about half an hour, but next we'll let you hear from Lincoln Riley, the head coach at Oklahoma, about his thoughts on Dede Westbrook, one of the newest members of this Jacksonville Jaguars team, as we continue along on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Jaguars Today Tuesday is brought to you by 904 Thin, where they guarantee you'll lose at least 20 pounds.
This is Malik Jackson, and you're listening to the only weekday show dedicated to your Jacksonville Jaguars. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL.
Darn right. Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone, about 20 minutes away, hopefully, as he should be coming in to join me as soon as he gets done talking to the media after practice today. If he's still calling it practice, I don't know if he's calling it practice or an activity as he did at the end of last week, but Jaguars minicamp, the veteran mandatory minicamp, got started this morning as they have moved up practice today and tomorrow. So tomorrow is supposed to be at 11 o'clock, but it'll be during the show tomorrow morning as well, from like 8:30 to 11 So we'll see what kind of sound we get out of that as Brandon Albert is speaking to the media after practice today, as well as head coach Doug Marrone. So if we can't get it to you today, we'll let you hear from Brandon Albert tomorrow, as he has reported to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Going to get to Lincoln Riley, the new head coach at Oklahoma, talking a little bit about Dede Westbrook here in just a moment. But a couple of Jaguars-related storylines from around the NFL. As Tyler and I were just discussing this on the break. I saw the news this morning that former Jaguars running back Denard Robinson, who had tried out for the Chicago Bears. It was 2 or 3 weeks ago, right, Tyler, that we saw the story where he was trying out for the Bears.
Looking big while doing so, yes.
Yeah, he didn't look to be in the best of shape. Maybe he needs one of those incentives, like Eddie Lacy, to get himself in shape for whatever team he's going to be trying out for. But I did see the story a couple weeks ago here where he was trying out for the Chicago Bears. Apparently that didn't work out for Denard. And I saw the one this morning where he has been invited to the Jets minicamp, which is running this week as well, the veteran minicamp, and basically on a tryout basis. He's up there. He's one of those tryout players at the Jets minicamp. And the story came out here in just the last couple hours that the Jets have signed Jordan Todman.
Oh,
is
yeah.
that correct, Tyler?
Yeah, so, he was last year's AFC Special Teams Player of the Week during one of last year's seasons, or last year's weeks. But yeah, I don't know what week, but yeah, he had a 99-yard touchdown return. But yeah, Jordan Todman not doing a whole lot since he's left Jacksonville.
No, I was actually looking at his career stats, and Jacksonville is the only stop in his career where he's had more than 10 rush attempts in a season. He had 76 in 2013, 32 in 2014 here in Jacksonville. That's where his second and third years here in a Jaguars uniform. Since he left in 2014, he had 4 carries for 22 yards with Pittsburgh in 2015, and then 9 carries for 59 yards for Indianapolis last season. So hasn't gotten the ball much, but apparently still making an impact on special teams. And the New York Jets apparently bringing him in to give them a little bit of that bump on the special team side of things. And when I saw the Denard Robinson story where he's trying out for the New York Jets, if you're at a point where you're having to go try out for the New York Jets, I mean, that's pretty bad. But if the New York Jets are going to pass on you with the way the league is right now and the way that Jets roster looks at this particular moment, if you can't play for the Jets, can you play anywhere in the NFL?
No. We heard Daniel Jeremiah tweet out last week what he said, something along the lines of a roster guy told me that this is the worst roster in the league in the last 10 years. The Jets roster is just one of the least talented rosters he's seen in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I know I can go back to 2013. We talked about it when we saw that quote. And, you know, the first half of that 2013 season, I mean, we seriously were talking about, is this the worst team in NFL history? They were getting beat by 20 a week. The Jags were that year, that first year under Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell. And then they found a way to win, I think it was 4 out of 5 in the second half of the season. So, obviously, they're not going to be put in that kind of conversation. But I can remember halfway through that season saying, is this the worst team in NFL history? And will they chase down those 0-16 Detroit Lions? Now, obviously, it didn't work out that way, as they did find a way to win a handful of games there towards the end of the year. But, man, that Jets roster, I mean, it is bad. It is so bad. Kelvin Beachum, who is a solid NFL player, but is one of the better players on that Jets roster right now with the way that they have it built. It certainly feels like they are in the tank for the 2017 season. They are all in on Sam Darnold or whoever the heck they think is the best quarterback in this upcoming draft. It'd be hysterical if they won 4 games.
Right. It'd be funny if it backfired and Christian Hackenberg actually ends up being something, and instead of hitting reporters, he hits his own Jets receivers for, 5-6 wins, and they pick 5 or 6 in next year's draft and don't get Sam Darnold.
Yeah, the really funny part would be not that he turns out to be something, but that he turns out to be enough to get you out of the quarterback sweepstakes. Like that's the funny part, and that's kind of, you know, we talk about the sort of no man's land that some of the fans here in Jacksonville would be happy with at 6-10. Whew. It's a bad place to be in this league because you're not going to get that top-end talent, and it's not like you feel really good about your team if they're going 6-10. It's you want to be a team that's really chasing the playoffs or is really, really bad enough to go get one of those guys. And we'll see what happens with the 2017 Jags. I certainly hope they're good enough to push for the playoffs, especially in this sorry division. One of the guys who may be able to help them do that is the fourth-round draft pick this season out of Oklahoma, the Biletnikoff Award winner. Yesterday on the Midday Chalk, the boys there, Joe C. T. Wick, had the opportunity to catch up with new Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley, and they asked him a little bit about D.D. Westbrook, obviously. One of the questions being, what does D.D. Westbrook bring to this Jacksonville Jaguars team?
I think you guys are going to really enjoy him. You know, he just got better and better throughout his time here. You know, D.D.'s a unique player. He's got track-type speed. He's got home run hitter speed. But he also combines that with a great feel for the position, and those are two things. A lot of times you can get one or the other, but it's hard to get both, and I think that's a big part of what makes him special. He's not a rep guy, meaning that, you know, I think he's going to pick up scheme-wise, you know, what's happening there very quickly and be comfortable with it, and he just understands the game. He's not a guy that you always have to lay out exactly how you want things, or he's not a cookie cutter type player. Mm-hmm. He can adjust. You're going to be able to move him around in the slot, you know, left side, right side, to create those matchups. That was something that we did a lot of here with him. You know, he's a competitor. He's a team guy. He wants to win. I think the coaches there will love using him, and I'm sure they'll do a great job of finding a lot of different ways to take advantage of all the skill sets that he does bring.
It is interesting him talking about, you know, them moving D.D. Westbrook around at Oklahoma after they drafted him. I think it was Doug Marrone talking about it, but mentioned that basically he had only played the one side and on the outside during his time at Oklahoma. But it sounds like maybe they moved him around a little bit more than we were led to believe. Look, I didn't watch enough Oklahoma football last year to know, and I haven't gone back and broken down tape of D.D. Westbrook at Oklahoma. I know the dude was a gigantic playmaker in that Sooners offense. He was a Heisman finalist, obviously, was given the award for being the best receiver in college football last year. The other side of it with D.D., though, has been the off-field stuff. Lincoln Riley has been around him now for a little while there at Oklahoma, and was asked yesterday while he joined the boys on Midday Chalk about D.D. and those off-field issues.
You know, D.D.'s, I think, journey is pretty well documented. You know, I grew up in a really small town, you know, in South Texas, you know, went to junior college and then got 2 years here at Oklahoma. And I think in the time that he was here with us, you know, did a great job, was a great teammate, you know, did well in school. You know, we had no issues with the guy. And I think there are some things in his past that he's learned from, that he's grown from. And not to say that he still doesn't have some growing up to do. That's part of it. But again, I always think that's part of our jobs as coaches. You know, you're not always going to get the finished product in here, but the one thing I always appreciated about him was he always listened. He was always respectful. And I thought that he could just continue to improve and to grow and mature each and every year. And, I think if people will continue to invest in that kid that way, then, I think he'll do a great job.
It's been, and in fairness to D.D., it's been a couple years since he's had any of these issues, right? It's not like it was a couple months ago that he was having this. I can remember, you know, the stories coming out of the Combine and how bad the interview process went for D.D. at the Combine because he wasn't allowed to participate on the field because of the domestic stuff. So he wasn't allowed to participate in the workouts at the Combine, but he was going through the interview process. And I can remember the stories coming out about how bad that was going for him. And look, I was honestly stunned when I was watching the draft that Saturday. And that's the name that came across when the Jacksonville Jaguars were picking. But this is a super talented athlete. And I am curious to see if, look, I talk about Leonard Fournette kind of the same way, where the Jacksonville Jaguars in their history haven't had a lot of the everyone knew this guy was going to be good, and we've known it basically since he stepped onto a college campus, right? Like Andrew Luck, everyone had an idea that Andrew Luck was going to be Andrew Luck from the moment he committed to Stanford. And then it was just watching his college career play out. And whenever he decided he was going to come into the draft, it was almost a foregone conclusion from the moment he got to Stanford that he was going to be the number one pick. The Jags have never really been in on that guy. You know, they haven't been in on Peyton Manning, that level of guy. Fournette is that type of athlete, Fournette is the type of guy that everyone's known he's the best player on the football field since, you know, he was in middle school, and they had to tell him to stop playing when he was in eighth grade because he was just too big for everyone else that was out there. And then he went to high school, and he was the best player in the state for 3 years in Louisiana. And then he chose to go to LSU, and he was one of the best players in the nation for 3 years during his time there at LSU. And everyone's known for 6 or 7 years that Leonard Fournette was going to be a top five draft pick in the NFL. Like, it's just been a foregone conclusion. That's the type of player, that's the type of athlete that Leonard Fournette is. He's special, right? He's got something that is special. Dede, while not kind of at that level, is kind of one of these other stories that happen in the NFL where they don't always work. But there are guys who deal with whatever they have to deal with. They grow up. They stop making the same kind of mistakes they did when they were young and stupid, and hopefully that's what it was with Dede. He was just young and stupid. To me, it's still inexcusable, but he's here now, and I want him to get it right, not only because I want the Jaguars to be getting a really good player in Dede Westbrook, but because I don't want anybody to have to deal with Dede Westbrook in that kind of mindset again. I don't want to see that kind of story with anybody ever again. He's here now. Hopefully he's a guy who's gotten his life together, gotten his head on straight, and is ready to just go play football and make plays for the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll see, as the boys on the Midday Chalk had the opportunity to catch up with head coach Lincoln Riley, talking a little bit.
A couple quick notes here before we get a break here, Tony. Yeah. Brandon Albert, we've been talking about him all show and all pretty much the last month or two on this program. John Osher tweeting out this quote from his first press conference with the media from Brandon Albert: "I'll be in training camp. I'll be ready to work. I'll be ready to go." So it looks like he is ending his contract. Holdout, for lack of a better term. He is no longer seeking a new deal, and also says that Coughlin made a joke about his weight when he saw him.
Oh, I wonder what that joke was. Brandon said he was keeping himself in shape. Did it hurt him to hear TC make the joke about him? I wonder what the follow-up was to that. We'll let you hear some of that Brandon Albert stuff tomorrow here on the program. Again, Doug Marrone expected to join us here in the next 10, 15 minutes or so as Brandon Albert's still speaking to the media. Another notable look, it's a story that we've been talking about. I've said that it felt like everybody was kind of blindsided by Brandon Albert asking for the new contract to get the deal renegotiated when he was brought here. And holdout's not the right term. Someone pointed that out on the text line earlier. It's not the right term because it was the voluntary portion of the offseason. He's here now, so technically there was no holdout. It was just him skipping the voluntary portion of the offseason. But generally, new players in a new team are guys who show up for that offseason to get better acquainted with what's going to be expected of them with that new team. It was pretty clear that Brandon Albert was trying to make a statement to get a new contract that just didn't work out that way. But Ryan O'Halloran tweeting out a few moments ago that Albert said he was not given any assurance in March of a new deal. So that kind of if you felt like the Jaguars looked a little stunned when the news came out that Albert was looking for a new deal, it seems like it was probably for good reason. Because I think when Albert's camp came out and said that's what they wanted, that was the first the Jaguars were probably hearing of it. But no holdout for training camp, which once he decided to show up for this voluntary portion of the offseason, I think we all knew that there was not likely to be a holdout once we got to training camp. If he's willing to come in now, certainly he's willing to come in a little bit later. Let's take a look at some of the storylines here with the Jaguars in minicamp. But we're expected to be joined by Doug Marrone here in about 10 minutes or so on the program. Ryan O'Halloran writing this up for Jacksonville.com this morning, just talking about the five kind of stories heading into Jaguars minicamp. And I tend to agree with him here. The number one story he had is Linder's home, talking about where in the world is Linder going to wind up starting somewhere on this offensive line. I still get the sense, if you ask me to nail it down, I still think that Brandon Linder is going to wind up being the starting center for this football team. I think, but I do like the move of you move him at this time of year and it puts pressure on some of those other guys. It gives guys like Shatley and Bowenko an opportunity to show a little bit more than if you're just giving Linder all the reps there at center, and you learn a little bit more about those guys, as well as put a little bit of pressure on some of the guards on this football team, especially a guy like A.J. Cann. Number two storyline, at least for Ryan O'Halloran, is the plan for Brandon Albert. Obviously, we've talked a lot about him. Wasn't here throughout the OTAs, but is here for the mandatory portion here of the offseason. Will be here for training camp. What does that mean for the competition along that offensive line, where everything falls into place? Again, I am really curious to see what they want to do with Cam, because Cam Robinson is a second-round pick. That's a high-value pick for this franchise going into an offensive line that has been okay but not great. And I certainly don't think it's good enough that I would expect a guy as talented as Cam Robinson to start his rookie season on the bench. I think that he likely has a place to start somewhere on this offensive line, whether it's left tackle or somewhere else, is yet to be seen. O'Halloran mentioned the 2015 draft class, saying that all of them are under contract, but not a whole lot of guaranteed spots for this group right now. If you need your memory refreshed, Dante Fowler was the first-round pick that year. Obviously, right now, he is kind of that second Leo or pass rush, that right defensive end spot behind Yannick Ngakoue. We'll see if he can find a way to win that spot, or at least if he develops a couple pass rush moves. It's hard to tell, again, this portion of the offseason. TJ Yeldon, the second-round pick that year. They just drafted Leonard Fournette. I think that says what you need to know about that. AJ Cann, we've already talked about. James Sample has not been healthy since he got here. Is he going to be competing for one of the backup safety jobs? That's probably the best case scenario for him at this point. Rashad Green, I've said that I don't think that he's on this roster unless he wins the punt return job outright. Michael Bennett has been okay, but what are they going to do with the numbers there on the interior of that offensive line? And Neil Sterling alongside Duval Doom's boy, Ben Koyak, and exactly what the role is going to be for kind of that mix up there with the tight end position. Number four storyline for O'Halloran, the backup quarterback spot. They Brandon Allen, obviously in there, coming into his second season with the Jags. We'll see how much he has developed. It's not a developmental league. There's just not enough time to put your hands on these guys and, you know, get that kind of growth that you would like, the hands-on approach to coaching these guys. There's just not enough time to do that kind of stuff. But where do they wind up going with that? Is Chad Henne a lock to make this roster as the backup? I think is an interesting question going into camp that we'll talk about. And the idea of falling behind, which is something I do plan on asking Doug Marrone about, not just with a guy like Brandon Albert, but if you put kind of Brandon Albert and Barry Church into the same category of veteran players who have been around the league, they know how to get themselves ready to play football, but they are joining a new team. So how valuable is this month for a new teammate, despite the fact that they're a veteran in this league, versus a guy like Deshaun Gibson, who hasn't been able to participate in the OTAs or minicamp? And how valuable is it for him as a guy who was a starter on this team last year, obviously should know what's expected of him in this defense, versus a guy like Dede Westbrook, who is obviously a rookie who everything that he's doing right now will be the first time he's doing it in an NFL capacity. So how do you differentiate between those kind of different categories of guys who have been limited or unavailable throughout much of this month of the offseason? So Doug Marrone, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, expected to join us here in studio in the next 5 minutes or so. We'll let you hear that conversation next as we continue along on a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL.
Where are you going to go when you need tires and you don't want to pay an arm and a leg? You know the answer to that by now. TireOutlet.com, their high-tech website, easy to use. You choose your make or model. Tire Outlet provides the lowest price tire options. You can use your cell phone, go online, choose tires. They can usually have any tire sent to your retail store of choice, ready to put on in less than an hour. Convenience, oh yeah, they've got that too. Wholesale pricing and premium service, that's what puts them a cut above, plus those 300,000 tires in their local inventory. I'm talking about TireOutlet.com.
Jaguars Today Tuesday is brought to you by 904 Thin, where they guarantee you'll lose at least 20 pounds.
And just when it hit me, somebody turned around and started playing that fucking music. Hey, man, here I am, a man on your scene. I can give you what you want. You got to come home with me. Hustling, hustling. Hustle, hustle. Oh, where you going? Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. You know what I'm saying?
Movie?
I may have once or twice.
I love it. I love it. Hey, you know what? I did it too. I'm going to admit to it.
All right, as we get rolling here, It is a Tuesday edition of Jaguars Today, joined by a very special guest, head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, Doug Marrone. You just heard him there with the karaoke. Now, you were singing, I think that was at training camp last year, Coach, that we caught you singing a little bit out there. Now, do you have, like, are you a karaoke guy on a Saturday night? You have a go-to track?
No, I actually don't do the karaoke thing. I get out there with the real band and go for it.
Oh. Are you the singer, or are we playing an instrument out there?
I'm singing. I'm going to go let it out. I mean, why not, right? I mean, something I enjoy, and, you know, I'm a thespian by heart. Everyone knows that. I was in a couple plays when I was in high school, and I like it. I enjoy it.
Were you the lead?
I watched, like, the other night, I watched the Tonys.
Yeah, were you the lead in these plays in high school?
Well, you can't get the lead right away now.
No.
I mean, you got to work yourself.
I know you got to work.
You got to work. So my first role was I played Vince Fontaine in Grease when I was in high school. And that was the 1 year because I couldn't do it in the fall. We had fall and the spring. So I played in the spring my first year. I played Vince Fontaine. And then my second year, my senior year, I wound up playing the lead in Damn Yankees. So I played Stephen Douglas and Gwen Verdon. You know, did Damn Yankees on Broadway, so I played the lead on that, which I enjoyed, and it happened because in a Shakespeare class, I had to do a soliloquy on Othello. You know, touch me not so near, mm-hmm. yet I persuade myself to speak the truth. I'd rather this tongue cut from my throat than do offense to Michael Cassio. So, yes, I got a little thespian in me.
Let me tell you, I did not expect when we had Doug Marrone in that we'd be doing Shakespeare.
No, we got to talk football. That's why I'm here.
I mean, we'll talk football.
No one wants to hear me talk about my high school days or doing a soliloquy or anything like that.
I got to tell you,
we're
impressed.
About ball, all ball. Let's go.
Let's go. Is there anyone in Jacksonville right now looking more forward to the new practice facility, outside of maybe Shot Con, the new practice facility being done than you, just having to move all these practice times around?
No. There's no one that's looking forward to it more than me. But you know, I think at the same time, I don't mind a little bit of that adversity, you know, that gets thrown at you, that little curveball. Mm-hmm. You know, here it comes. Hey, we threw him a curveball. You know, they're expecting a practice in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden, you know, the weather. Let's go ahead and do it. And I think that I think that's the positive outlook on it. But you know, obviously, we'll be excited, for the indoor to be complete.
Ideally, obviously, you'd like to have everyone available through OTAs in the mini camp, but if you're going to have to deal with some of the nagging injuries, now is the time before you get into training camp and into the regular season. Still, how much does it affect different guys to miss time? For instance, Deshaun Gibson, who was here last year, how much does it bother him to miss this month versus maybe a guy like Barry Church, who it's his first year in Jacksonville, and a guy like Dede Westbrook, who is a rookie, obviously, in the league?
Well, I think it's a point well taken, meaning that, you know, it's going to affect people differently, you know, depending on what their experience is. But the way I look at it is the overall thing is that they're missing, and you don't want that. So the two things that I talk about all the time is coachability and availability. You know, and as long as you're coachable and you're available, you can always, you know, you can get better. You can be out there. You can have a better understanding. It's very difficult to learn how to play this game and to learn your teammates, learn, you know, what's going on the field when you're not on the field. So for me, I don't look at it as like, oh, it's not going to hurt him that much. Oh, it's going to hurt everyone in a large way. But then all of a sudden, after you take that away, now it's a little bit different as far as experience goes.
With Brandon Albert being here, excuse me, frog in the throat. With Brandon Albert being here now for the mandatory portion of the offseason, the competition really between Albert and Cam Robinson can really get going for that left tackle spot. Do you anticipate whichever of those players doesn't win that left tackle spot starting somewhere else on this offensive line?
I don't know if I'm there yet. You know, I really don't know if I can look forward that far ahead to see that's the direction that we're going. I think that, you know, people, you know, talk about competition at that position. There's competition at every position, really. And I know people will say, well, come on, coach, you know, this guy. But no, I think you have to earn it. I think you got to go out there and compete. I think that's one of the things about being a head coach. I think that, you know, it's my responsibility to make sure that we put the best players on the field, not just who we think's going to play well, but actually does play well and practices well. So for me, it's competition. I don't know. The best five will be out there. So to answer your question, if one of those two are the best five, yeah, we'll have to figure out how we'll do that. And we're going to have to figure it out, you know, quite quickly. You know, we don't want to wait now till all the way to the end of training camp.
Yeah, how much time do you think you need once you get into training camp where not only to make a decision on where guys are going to play, but how much time they may need at a position that they might not be playing right now?
I think the longest period of time that you can go, okay, is probably somewhere the day after that third preseason game. I think you got to be pretty much set. That's just a personal opinion. It's not based on anything except for just my experience. I think, you know, by that time you got to be ready to go, and that's the latest. So anything you can get done earlier, and you got the information where you feel comfortable to make a decision and go.
Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone joining us here in studio to the quarterback position. It's very rare that you're going to have a hot mic in front of you and not be asked about Blake. But have you seen a mechanically improved Blake Bortles through the OTAs and minicamp practice?
Mechanically improved, yes, I have. I think that there's a big difference. I think a lot goes to – I think Blake's worked hard, but, you know, obviously Scott Milanovich, the quarterback coach that we brought in here, former quarterback at the University of Maryland, former quarterback in the NFL – you know, the one thing that I talked to Scott about when we brought him in here was, hey, listen, I know that Coach Hack is going to talk about the schematics and what we're going to do offensively and how we're going to attack defenses. Your job is to make sure not just Blake but all of our quarterbacks mechanically are sound, and we are working on fundamentals every day. So that's what we've been doing, so we feel very comfortable, you know, where we are now. The thing is we're going into this period now where, you know, it's like I call it off season two, where, you know, you got to stay on top of this. So because when you go and when those bullets start flying and they're live, what I mean is you can get sacked, you can get hit, you're in this preseason game, you know, that's when the mechanics, that's the true test to see if your mechanics are up to par, meaning that they're going to withstand that test at its full speed, knowing that you could potentially get hit.
Not necessarily numbers, but talking about Blake, what are your expectations for him this season?
Well, you say expectations the same expectations I have for all the players. I want to make sure that they can go out there and play winning football for us. And whatever it takes for us to win, that's what I expect them to do. No different than I'd ask the offensive guard or the wide receiver or the defensive back. You know, I think, you know, to put numbers on things, I'm not going to do that. If everyone does what their job and does what they're supposed to do, then we'll be okay.
Along the same kind of lines, Dante Fowler, obviously a guy going into his third year now. Everyone can see the athlete that he is. I mean, he's a freak of an athlete playing that position. Have you seen that kind of growth from him again that you wanted to see from him going from year two to year three?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. You know, nutritionally, in the weight room, there's a lot of things off the field, you know, meaning from that standpoint of just straight discipline. I think, you know, it's funny. I always look and I go back and, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, the Rucker League in Harlem, you know, I always saw great athletes. I mean, I was down there and I saw unbelievable basketball players. I said to myself, these guys can play in the NBA. These guys can play there. And then, you know, me and my friends and I, we'd always go in and say, well, why aren't they playing in the NBA? You know, why aren't they playing in college? You know, what? These guys are unbelievable. You know, so just being a great athlete is not going to put you in a position to be, you know, a winning type a football player. You need other things. And I think that's what I'm starting to see out of Dante now. We know he's a great athlete, but I'm starting to see the discipline. I'm starting to see, you know, the daily basis. I'm starting to see, you know, the hard work that he's putting in off the field. What people can't see is starting to carry over on the field. So I'm excited about the direction we're heading. With him, it's just a matter of consistency. Can we keep this up? Can we keep going in this direction? You know, obviously that's our goal. That's his goal. And if he can continue to do that, I think we'll get very good production on him.
Jaguars head coach Doug Marrone joining us for another couple of minutes. Let's get away from team-specific stuff here, Doug, for a moment or two. What is...
I didn't know there was anything else.
But what is Doug Marrone's football philosophy as a head coach?
When you say football, win. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean, the only reason why you're doing this is to get out there, compete, and win. I love competing. I love winning. You know, I think, you know, the one thing I cannot stand is I hate losing more than I like and love winning, you know, so I can't stand that. So I think for me, I want to make sure that we're tough, we're physical, we're smart, we can execute, we're in great shape. You know, those are the things that I take a lot of pride in of fielding a football team, you know, and then going out there and putting the best players out there, people that have earned it, and going out and seeing if the plans, all three plans that you put together during a week, you know, seeing, hey, who is right and who is wrong. you know, and let's go out there and play and let's get after it. And let's not make any excuses and let's go out there and win football games.
What lessons do you think you can take from your time as the head coach there at Buffalo? You went 9-7 in 2014 as the head coach up there, but what lessons do you think you can take from that time to help you now that you're in that position again here in Jacksonville?
Well, there's a lot. I think you learn every year, and even now, you know, with Coach Coughlin here, you know, there's quite a bit of learning for myself that, you know, I bounce things off him. So I think there's no substitute for hard work. I really think that as long as you're out there and you can get in your mind that you can, you know, you have to be able to say, okay, what are my opponents doing? Okay, what's my opponents doing right now? And you've got to outwork them. You've got to find an edge about yourself and that's what I've been talking to this team about. I mean, these teams are above us. You know, we're looking from the bottom up. You know, so how do we go ahead and how do we make this change? You know, it's not going to be by just doing everything like everybody else is doing. We've got to do things differently. We've got to do them better. We've got to pay attention to the details. We've got to do all the little things better. We go out on that field, and if we have 2.5 hours, it's got to be 2.5 hours of the best planned practice, the highest level of production. We've got to do it better than anyone's doing it right now. That's the only way we're going to be able to win, because if we keep doing it the same way, why is anything going to change? It's not. And that's not why we're here. We're here to make change, and we have to get the players to understand it. I think they're starting to respond to it, but we still have a long way to go.
I was about to say, along those lines, are you satisfied with the progress you've seen?
You know, I think for me, if I ever get up in front of the team and say, I'm satisfied, we're in trouble. So I always try to have you know, this chip on my shoulder or whatever you want to call it, this pushing, because, you know, I see this level that is so high for this football team that we're not, you know, that I have to keep going with them. So, you know, for me, hey, have we touched on some of the things? Absolutely. Do we know exactly, you know, how far we have to go? I don't know if we know that right now. I do. Personally, I know how hard we're going to have to push this team. So, again, but I think the players have been open to it. Today we just came off the field. We pushed them hard. We ran afterwards. We did a lot. And, you know, I think they understand we're going to continue to push and create this adversity and create this, you know, this willingness of ourselves to know that we've outworked people, and that's going to equate to wins.
Coach, you're talking directly to the fan base right now. So as we wrap things up with you, what is your message for the Jaguars fans out there listening right now?
Like I told them, I want the fans to understand that we're going to build this team based on what our fan base is. I'm in this community. I go out there, you know, just hardworking people that get up every day and go to work and do the best job they possibly can. You know, and that's got to be our football team. And we got to put our hard hats on. We got to take our lunch pail. We've got to go to work. You know, we've got to outwork teams and just be tough and be physical and be resilient. I think those are the things that represent this community. I think that, you know, we have to represent that community on the football field, and we haven't done that. And the people in this community, they have a right to have a good football team. Our fans deserve that. And it's the challenge of our coaching staff and our players to be able to put forth that product on that field. Because I have a vision of our field. I have a vision of when we're going to take this field. And I understand it's not going to happen, you know, right away. We're going to have to earn the fans' respect by being on that field and winning football games at home and getting them back in here and getting everyone with Jaguar gear on and going out there and having a true home field advantage and kicking the crap out of somebody and then celebrating like rock stars afterwards. Those are the things that we're going to have to accomplish, and it takes a long time to get established, but we don't have time. We've got to do it now. So I'm excited. I'm fired up, obviously. You can tell by the way I'm talking right
Absolutely,
now. We just
yeah.
got off that practice field, and I'm fired up to see how far we can take this team, and I'm fired up for our fans to put a team out there that they can be proud of.
Coach, I know you love talking football. Anytime you want to, that door is always open from 10 to noon. So if you get bored in your office, you just want to come talk football for 5 minutes.
All right, how could you get bored around here? We got so much work to do.
Or if you just want to come in and do, yeah. you know, a little Shakespeare.
What?
If you just want an audience of two.
You got me fired up. I'm going back to work.
All right, there
he
goes.
I'm going.
Coach Doug Marrone,
right.
Thank you so much for joining us. So for Doug Marrone, for T-Wig, for myself, Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt back at the studio, that'll do it for us here on Tuesday. We'll welcome in the boys of Midday Chalk next right here on 1010XL.
You're a pro. You know, this isn't pass and tap.